Hi, I'm Josh, and welcome to the Wild Nature Photography Podcast, the occasional podcast that talks the art and craft of nature photography. It is the 10th of April, 2024. This is podcast number 95, and this podcast is going to be a book review. Specifically, it's going to be a review of Volume 8 of Bird Photographer of the Year. But just before I get to that, a few things to go over, a little bit of housekeeping. I got back to Australia a little over a week ago. It's been a while since I did a podcast. I think the last podcast I did was on the 21st of last month. Part of the reason for the delay this time was not just that I was traveling between Sweden and Australia, but I actually picked up quite a nasty cold in the last week I was in Sweden. And so I've been a little bit under the weather. That combined with jet lag on return to Australia meant I really wasn't feeling up to recording a podcast last week. So apologies for the delay in that. That's just the way it went. I had an absolutely incredible trip to the east coast of Greenland in winter. I haven't published the trip report for that yet, but I will be doing so, I hope, this week. I have it in draft format already. I have processed some photographs. It was a really phenomenal experience, both the wildlife, the travel, the experience of being out on the sea ice in winter was really, really quite phenomenal. So I have quite a bit more to say about that in the trip report. I did publish the trip report for the Arctic Fox trip this year in February. I will put a link to that in the show notes, if I remember at the end, just for those of you who might be interested in reading it. Again, we had phenomenal weather. And when I say phenomenal weather, I really mean we had some blizzards, some blowing snow, which is the sort of weather that we are really wanting to have when we're out in the field photographing Arctic wildlife, just for that drama and for that emotional impact that it adds to the photograph. Blue sky, sunny days, as I say, they're very nice for sitting around drinking coffee or enjoying the view, but not so nice for photography, particularly with wildlife. You really need to have some drama and some weather happening. So just before we come to Bird Photographer of the Year, a little bit of competition news, I guess. I was very fortunate to pick up a highly honored in Nature's Best Photography in the Paul of Passion category in the recent awards. I don't actually recall entering this competition this year. I must have done so, clearly, as I picked up a highly honored, which was for an image I had shot of emperor penguins down on the sea ice at Gould Bay in Antarctica. And again, I'll try and put a link to that in the show notes. I also managed to take out the People's Choice Award first place for one of my palace cat photographs in the Asia Pacific Photography Awards in the nature category. So that was also very nice. So two little bits of good news that I picked up on my return travel to Australia. It's always nice to do well in these competitions. I really only enter them, as I've said before, to compete against myself. I think, you know, photography is really not a competitive sport, or at least it shouldn't be a competitive sport, but we should be competing against ourselves, or at least trying to improve on our own work. So I think it's a great way to also see what other people are doing in the industry and what photographs are winning and what the trends are at the moment as well. Of course, it's still very, very subjective, and you know, even just making the finals in a competition, I think, is a wonderful achievement, because after that, it really comes down to the individual judge on a given day, and they might swing one way or another. So let's come to the topic of the day, the review of Bird Photographer of the Year. But one last bit of, I guess, not news, but sort of a segue into this review. I was asked recently by someone, you know, they said, "Hey, Josh, you're the only person I know, or the only photographer I know, that actually reviews books. All the other photographers are out there busy reviewing cameras and lenses." And I said, "Yeah, that's right." And the reason for that is I don't want to get involved in reviewing cameras and lenses. One, there's already enough people out there doing that. But two, cameras and lenses don't make you better photographers. A new camera and a new lens, as I've talked about before, is actually more likely to hurt your photography than actually improve it, as you struggle to learn the new tool that you've got. You're far better off learning to use the tool that you already own properly, so that the controls become muscle memory and you can then get out in the field and you can remove that barrier, that technological barrier of the camera that's between you and the subject, and focus on being an artist, focus on being creative, and let your muscle memory take care of controlling the camera. When you get to that state with your camera, you're really in a position, I think, to do your best work. So I don't believe in reviewing cameras and lenses, simply because they don't improve anybody's photography. It's very nice, of course, to have a new camera or a new lens, and we all enjoy having those toys. But I, for the sake of reviews, no, I'm not that interested, to be honest, in reviewing cameras or lenses, nor am I that interested in watching reviews on cameras or lenses, primarily because most of the reviewers out there really don't know what they're talking about. in my experience. They're not really using them in the field, and they're certainly not using them in the sort of environments that I'm using them. So when I like to talk about a product that I have been using, I want to base it on my experience in the field, not walking down the street photographing dogs and cats or people crossing the road. That's not what I do. I need to be out in the Arctic and the Antarctic in the inclement weather. That's how I need to be able to test my equipment, and that's where I think the rubber hits the road, if you like. But let's come to this book, Bird Photographer of the Year. Now, this is volume 8. So I own all 8 volumes of this book, and there's a very good reason for that. They're fantastic. But full disclosure, I am featured in this issue 8 of Bird Photographer of the Year. This was the first year that I entered Bird Photographer of the Year, the competition. And I was very fortunate to do very, very well and have a number of images. I think I had half a dozen images or something like that that made the finals. And then quite a few of them actually appear in the final book as well. So I am featured in this book. Now, if you've listened to my podcast on this on reviewing Bird Photographer of the Year, then you'll already be familiar with what this book is like, what this book is about. And volume 8 is exactly the same. Really, there is no difference in the print quality to volumes 1 to 7. The sizing is the same, which, by the way, I very much appreciate. I love the fact that I can put this on my shelf next to all the other volumes and it looks like part of a set. I like that very, very much. I like the fact that the volumes are numbered on the side so that I can see on the spine which volume I'm reaching for. And I like the fact that the images that are used on the cover are very clean images, very clean backgrounds, which means that the colors that are in the dust jacket work very nicely to distinguish each volume from the other. I like that a lot. I think these, as I've said in my previous review, they're books that are really, really well done. I think if you have any interest in birds or bird photography, I believe these books are must own. And the reason I say that is they're such a good resource. They're such a great way to see what other photographers are doing when they're photographing birds, how they're creating stunning images, and they're just full of inspiration. Every single page in here, and I'm just going to open up this book at random now that's on my lap, and I'm on page 115 now, and there is a fantastic image of a parasite pecker sitting on what I think must be not a bison, but whatever that large bison-like animal, the buffalo. There it is, it came to me, the buffalo. And it's just a wonderful image. And it's a fantastic example of how to include birds in the landscape. Then if I flick over to another page, totally again at random, here we are on page 83, where we've got long-tailed ducks in flight against a beautiful pink sky with blowing snow over the water. Stunning image. And again, absolute wonderful example of how to do birds in flight. Every single page, here now on page 130, beautiful black and white image of a cormorant in fog, sitting on a tree, drying its wings. Stunning photograph that gives me a lot of inspiration for the sort of thing that I might try and do when I'm fortunate enough to next be able to photograph birds in a foggy environment. So I think these books are must-own for anyone with even a passing interest in bird photography, just because you can draw so much from these books. And I think you can learn an awful lot just by sitting down with one of these books and a cup of coffee or a cup of tea and going through the images and really absorbing them. And as I've talked about in my previous review, what I love is that every single book in here has – every single photograph, sorry, has obviously the image title, what the bird is, where it was taken, and then there's a little bit of – a couple of sentences of story about how the shot was taken, and then the equipment that the camera and the settings that was used to make the photograph. Now, personally, I don't care so much about the equipment. Whether it was taken with a Nikon, Canon, Sony, I really couldn't care. But what I am interested in is what f-stop did they use, what ISO, and what aperture? Because those are three important factors that I'm always considering when I'm in the field photographing birds. What is the correct f-stop? What is the correct aperture? How much shutter speed do I need? These are very, very important things to know. And when you look at a photograph and you can see, okay, there's blur in the wings, and he shot it at 1/1000 of a second. So, okay, 1/1000 of a second was not enough to get rid of all the blur in the wings, or maybe that was a creative decision the photographer wanted in order to give a feeling of movement in the photograph. So this is wonderful stuff. These books are reference quality in terms of view of the subjects and in terms of view of what can be learned from them. I have entered Bird Photographer of the Year again for 2024. And again, full disclosure, I have a couple of photographs that have made the finals. Whether they make the the next volume, volume 9 or not, will remains to be seen. But it is very, very nice to again be in the finals. I have talked before about photographic books and the presentation and how important presentation is and how I very much like a dust jacket. And all of the dust jackets on these books are done very, very nicely. They're very traditional. There's nothing on the actual hardcover itself. So the dust jacket is the only place you can actually see the cover photograph in Bird Photographer of the Year, Volume 8. That's a hummingbird. Speaking of hummingbirds, actually, and this is sort of diverting a little bit from topic, but I am putting on a new trip, a new workshop to Colombia in 2026 for birds, because Colombia is one of the best places in the world for photographing birds. So if you are interested in that, it's early days. You can just drop me a note. I don't as yet have a PDF itinerary of this trip, but I will have, I hope, within the next couple of weeks. That's one of my projects while I'm back here in Australia, is to get that up and running. But again, I'm just flicking through the book here at random on my lap as I record this podcast. And this image on page 39 of the Oriental Dwarf Kingfisher with a spider in its beak is superb. Beautiful image, well processed, well shot. And I can see, you know, that it was shot at 2,000th of a second, f7.1 and ISO 4,000. That's good information to know, and where it was shot too, because this is not a bird I've ever seen in the wild. So again, I highly recommend these books. In terms of stars, you know, in terms of print quality, I'm sorry, let's begin with print quality. This is of the same standard as the other seven volumes, meaning it's very, very good, more than acceptable and more than good enough. And really, I think, just to sum up, without sort of going on for too much about this book, but if you, as I said, if you have an interest in birds, it's a five-star book. You must pick this up because bird photography is not easy and is one of the subjects that I am asked the most about when I'm out in the field. How do you get good photographs of birds? When I was in East Greenland a couple of weeks ago, we were photographing ptarmigan in the snow and the ice in very cold temperatures, around minus 30. And it was fantastic to be able to talk to the participants on that trip about how to photograph these ptarmigan, what to look for, where to lie so you get clean backgrounds, what shutter speeds to use. That's all good stuff. So I think we'll wrap up the review of Bird Photographer of the Year, Volume 8 there. This can be ordered online. It can be ordered direct from Bird Photographer of the Year. And as I think I said in my previous podcast when I reviewed the other volumes, I tried to do that, but the freight cost to Australia was quite insane, and I ended up getting a number of these books off Amazon for quite a lot less. So maybe just have a bit of a shop around if you're looking for these books. I don't have a recommendation. If you just want to get one to try it, maybe just start with the latest one, Volume 8. I don't think any particular volume is better than another. If you're going to purchase the whole set, which I would encourage you to do, then you might have to shop around to find some of the earlier volumes that are actually now getting quite hard to find. And that is often the case with photography books. I have a few other new books that have also landed and have been awaiting here for me to review. I'll come to those over the next few weeks. I am going to be in Australia now for the next, roughly the next 4 weeks before I fly to Africa for a month. So this is a chance for me to catch up on office paperwork. I have a number of trip PDFs that I need to generate for upcoming workshops and expeditions, as well as some website work and blog work. There's actually quite a lot to do. So I need to get into that now that I'm back, and also now that I'm over my cold as well. That was, I'm just glad I didn't get sick when I was in Greenland in winter. That would have been most uncomfortable. But thankfully it came afterwards, so that's a good thing. So I think that's it. We'll wrap it up for today. I'm Josh. It has been the 10th of April, 2024, podcast number 95. Look forward to seeing you out in the field. Take care.